I fear the hands of all those neighbors raised together may impose one day a tyranny weightier than the hand of a single lord. With the lord at least you know who to bring to account, but when a mob raises its many hands, which holds the blame? Max snorted. Bring a lord to account? 4 years since, the village brought suit against the steward when Manfred enclosed the common greenway.
Well, Everard.
The lord must save his honor. It's a legal fiction, but a useful one. Like that Quillian of yours. One thumb longer, and it would be a sword, which would be above your station.
We Swiss like them, he said, laying a hand on the pommel and grinning. What I mean is, Manfred could then chastise his steward for doing what he had told him to do, and everyone pretends to believe it.
Max made a curt gesture.
Morgarten rendered a more vigorous verdict. We brought the Habsburg Duke to account there, I tell you.
Dietrich looked at him. Anything too vigorous ends with peasants dangling from trees. That's a fruit I'd not see harvested again.
In the Swiss, the peasants won.
And yet here you are, serving the Huckwald heir, who serves both the Baden Markgraf and the Habsburg Duke. To this, Max made no response. They crossed over the Millbrook Bridge and took the road toward Bear Valley. The fallow fields lay on the left and the autumn fields on the right, the ground swelling higher and edging into the dirt track, pinching it until it seemed more trench than road. Hedgerows and briar bushes meant to keep cows and sheep from wandering into the croplands provided a bit of inadvertent shade to the walkers, and seemed veritable trees by reason of the height of the land from which they sprouted. The road, muddy through this stretch from a rivulet tributary to the Millbrook, meandered first this way, then that, as the slope and pitch dictated. Dietrich had wondered at times what sort of place Bear Valley might be that travelers seemed disinclined to go straight there. Near the common pasture the road shed its subterranean aspect and emerged onto the shoulder of the hill, a gentle swell of land that marked the first pitch into the Katharinenberg. The sun was more unremittingly present here, with even the small shade of the hedgerows gone. Someone had opened the gate between the commons and the autumn fields so that the village cows could graze on the stubble and deposit their manure for the fall planting. From the higher ground of the meadow, yellow with goose blooms, they spied Heinrich Altenbach's homestead on the track to Stag's Leap. Altenbach had left the manor several years since to drain some marshland. Being waste, the marsh had been claimed for no lord's manor, and Altenbach had built on it a cottage so he would not have to walk each day to his fields.
I suppose every man would rather live on his own land, Max suggested when Dietrich had remarked the farmhouse, if he owned his own plough and beasts and had no wish to share them with his neighbor. But it is a far run to the castle should an army pass this way, and those neighbors might not open the gate to him.
On the far side of the meadow the forest glowered softly black. Thin streamers of white smoke twisted among the birch and pine and oak. Dietrich and Max paused under a solitary oak to drink from their water skins. Dietrich had some chestnuts in his scrip which he shared with the sergeant. The latter, for his part, studied the plumes of smoke with great attention, juggling the nuts in his hand like a set of knuckle-bones. Easy to get lost in there, Dietrich commented.
Stay to the game trails, Max said, half distracted. Don't hair off into the brush.
He popped the meat from a chestnut and threw it into his mouth. The forest was cooler than the open meadow. Sunlight penetrated only in shattered fragments, dappling the hazel bushes and bluebells underneath the canopy. A few strides and Dietrich was swallowed up. The harvest sounds grew distant, then muffled, then ceased entirely to argue with the silence. He and Max passed among the oaks and larches and black spruce on grumbling carpets of last year's leaves. Dietrich soon lost all sense of direction and stayed close by the sergeant. The air reeked of stale smoke and ashes, and overlaying it a sharp smell like salt and urine and sulphur all mixed together. They soon came to burnt land. There, hot wood glowered within split trunks, awaiting only a blast of air to unravel again into flames. The seared corpses of small animals lay tangled in the brush. "Holzbrenner's kiln is deeper in, I think," Dietrich said. "That way." Max said nothing. He was trying to look everywhere at once. "The charcoal burner is a solitary man," Dietrich continued. "He would have made a fine contemplative." But Max was not listening. "It was only lightning," Dietrich said. And the sergeant flinched, turned at last to look at him.
"How did you—"
"You were thinking too loudly. I would not have asked you to accompany me, but Josef has not been seen since the fires, and Lawrence fears for him and his apprentice."
Max grunted. "The smith fears running short of charcoal. Klaus tells me that this Josef only comes into the village when he has charcoal to sell, or duties to pay the hare. And then he nearly always sends the boy. That supernatural wind toppled his kiln and set the woods on fire, and he's been digging a new one. That's why we've not seen his smoke."
"The wind was not supernatural," Dietrich insisted, but with no great conviction. The ruin grew more extensive the farther they walked. They saw trees broken off, uprooted, toppled, leaning one upon the other. Sunlight poured through holes in the canopy. "A giant has played at jackstraw," said Dietrich.
"I've seen destruction like this," Max said.
"Like this? Where?"
Max shook his head. "Only not so vast. Look how the trees lie here, and how they lie over there, as if they have all fallen outward from some center."
Dietrich gave him a look. "Why?"
"At the siege of Cividale down in the Friuli, nearly 20 years ago, I think. Christ, I was young and stupid running off that way to help the Austrians fight the Venetians. What quarrel was that of mine? Two of the German knights brought a pot de fer with the black powder. Well, it helped us carry the city, but one of the barrels burst while they were mixing the powder. They always do the mixing in the field, and I can see why. There was a crack like thunder, and the wind blast scattered men and equipment all about."
He looked again at the fallen trees.
"Like those."
"How large must a barrel of the black powder be to do so much damage?" Dietrich asked.
Max did not answer.
A chittering sound like the buzzing of locusts filled the air, though it was the wrong year for locusts. Dietrich looked at the fallen trees and thought, "The impetus came from that direction."
Finally, the sergeant blew out his breath. "Right, then, this way."
He turned away to follow the trail toward the kiln. The clearing was a shallow pit, 50 paces across and floored with a layer of ash and beaten earth. In the flattened center stood the kiln itself, a mound of earth and sod 5 long paces in diameter, but the earthen seal had been ripped away on one side, exposing the wood inside and allowing the wind to blast the fire. The sparks had been scattered into the woods, setting the fires whose remnants they had lately passed. The Sixtus Day wind had rung the church bells on the far side of the valley. Here it must have blown 100 times stronger, harrowing the trees that surrounded the clearing, scattering the windbreaks that regulated the airflow into the kiln, peeling the earth from the kiln, gouging a channel through the forest like a river in flood. Only the strongest trees remained upright, and many of those were shattered and bent. Dietrich stepped around the ruined kiln. A fan of burnt timbers and thatch marked where the charcoal maker's cottage had once stood. At the end of that spray, against the sagging trees on the far side of the clearing, Dietrich found Josef and his apprentice. Their charred torsos lacked arms and legs, and, in the lad's case, a head. Dietrich searched his memory for the boy's name, but it would not come. Both bodies had been smashed and broken as if they'd fallen from a great cliff, and both were skewered with splinters of wood. Yet what wind could be so strong? Farther off he saw a leg, wedged in the fork of a cracked beech. He searched no further, but put his back to the terrible sight.